Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Mary Blake Show. Today, my guest is Vanessa Talmalord. She has far too many credentials to mention. Let's say she's an author, star guest on national TV shows, radio, TV and radio host, Akashic Records specialist, creator of many amazing Aquarian Age methods of enhancing lives. And Vanessa and her husband, Sir Peter, co-created the Aquarian Federation, East Meets West, Alternative Healing, the Children's Champions, the Clean Earth Air and Water Alliance, and so much more. In her 40-year career, she has done just amazing things. So I'm going to introduce you right now and bring her on so we don't miss a minute. Vanessa, welcome.
Thank you, Mary. So good to be on with you. What a special lady you are.
Hard,
you have had
hard,
such an influence on so many, and particularly on us.
Oh, thank you. You know, your career has spanned some, in 40 years, my goodness, you have been, you've just been a star blazing across the universe. That's all I can say. Why don't you just tell us, just tell us some of the things that you'd really like to give to the world.
Wow. I started with helping to launch the Broadway musical Hair, and then Godspell and JC Superstar. And Hair started some amazing things that I am very happy are now unfolding on the planet with the Aquarian Age. Even as the curtain opened, it is the dawning of the Age of Aquarius. Harmony and understanding, sympathy and trust abounding. No more falsehoods or division. Golden living dreams and visions. Mystic crystal revelations and the mind's true liberation. Aquarius, Aquarius. And all of those things have so much to do with the great things that are happening even right now with our world. In its great awakening, the catalyst and quickening agent that has... Has gotten people to get
course.
In touch with their true feelings and their true self and find their true voice. He fulfills the great prophecy that in a couple hundred years, the Sun King would return to be the activating catalyst of the incoming Aquarian Age, that he would return to the Earth. And indeed, one aspect of that oversoul is down and has done so much that if he stopped everything tomorrow, he will have already done an extraordinary mission and that each person in their own way has found inside themselves. Their true voice, their true feelings, and that's all part of the prophecy.
Oh, absolutely.
For so many years as an Akashic channel. I am intuitive in such a way as I am able to be with someone, and sometimes, well, even over the phone, with clairaudient and clairvoyant and various faculties, I'm able to tell them so many things about their life, past, present, and future. You know, and this, how did you know? How did you know? Well, I've known since I was eight years old. Just before my eighth birthday, I gave my life to God, and I've been telling people things that I just picked up, and because they're the one with me, they're the ones that get to hear and then say, how did you know that? God. And the best way to know is to just know.
Yes.
And I have specialized in reincarnation in terms of a person's mission and what they're bringing over from a previous incarnation. What talents, what attractions, aversions, what reoccurring patterns, fears, phobias, all kinds of talent and abilities that are responsible for children being prodigies. And when
you know your previous incarnations, it makes sense
to this life.
What I would really like to know is, and I'd love to hear about some of the ways that you actually helped people to change their lives. Because I know you have been a major force in people literally turning their lives around and doing what they came here for instead of what people told them to do.
Yeah, I'm known as the mission catalyst, and activating and awakening that higher self part of them that comes from what is the oversoul or superconscious or higher self or God self, however we want to say it and understand it, through our subconscious, which is the doorway from the superconscious to the conscious mind. And all great geniuses and artists and talented inventors and all of that are people who are channeling from higher space places, from what's called the causal plane. The thought forms that come down as Edison's electric lights and the many inspirations, everything from Elvis Presley to David Bowie to the Beatles to the Jacksons and Michael and all of that. And they're channeling their dance and their song and their music and art.
Could you just give us a couple of ideas of some of the people that you have inspired in your career and how they've changed their lives?
There are a number of people who are perfectly okay too, because I've gotten permission in certain places. I want to give an example of how a person's life can change as a result of knowing something about something that happened in a previous incarnation. When you go to a previous incarnational event that's affecting this lifetime, you can ground it and complete it. And one of my earliest examples was a person who, as client was sitting with me, and I told them, I see a chandelier falling and hitting your shoulder here on the right. And I touched my right shoulder, hitting you, and it paralyzed part of your face and neck and that part of your body. And the person burst into tears immediately, saying, oh, my God, I've always had fears of heights. I've always had fears of things falling on me. It's been with me all my life. And in the months to come and even years to come, the fear never returned. We completed it. Other happy
fantastic
ways are all the different people I've told about their different musical talents or artistic talents or things. And then they go out and fiddle around with a guitar or a piano or something for a weekend, and they're playing because they did before. And I said, all you have to do is re-remember.
Yeah.
It's just remembering what you already know. That's what recalling is. Recalling past lives is recalling forward the talents from those incarnations so that they are not left behind in the subconscious memory bank. So
absolutely.
I remember my little friend Lizzie, whose father, when she was less than a year old, took her over to the pool and dropped her in and said, swim. And she faithfully paddled about, and later on found out and heard him say to one of his friends, I knew perfectly well any daughter of mine could swim. He was, of course, a captain of his own boat, his own sailboat, ship, or whatever. So he had done a number of things in the Navy. Any child of his could swim. And then
absolutely.
one other idea, this applies to David Bowie, a dear friend, and many things to tell you about things that, oh, boy. A certain friend of mine plays any instrument you put in their hands, and they were invited to be on In the Hair musical spontaneously because somebody had fallen. This person had to learn the auto harp in an afternoon and several things. Well, he plays just about any instrument you put in his hands, and I once asked his mother, how does he know how to do this? What lessons has he had? She says, he's never had any lessons. Well, how can he do it? And she looked at me just with this very wonderful look, and she says, nobody ever told him he couldn't.
There you go.
Answer, uh-huh. Nobody ever told him he couldn't. Now,
exactly.
Prince,
right.
He played
and
all kinds of instruments.
Obviously, he
David
had to
Bowie
have been
did.
A musician in his other incarnation,
yeah.
Some one of them.
Oh, you bet. Absolutely.
Maybe many.
My,
as you know, I've been a healer in many of my
yes.
incarnations.
Yes,
you well
you
know
sure
that.
Have.
Mm-hmm. And a psychic counselor.
Oh, you have changed the lives of more people. You certainly changed my life in a major way by taking me back so that I relived a passing in a previous incarnation that had affected me all of my life until that moment, until that evening when we were together and you took me back to reliving it and experiencing something that gave me a revelation and took away a fear, trauma, ancient memory of things connected with my neck. And your experience of, my experience with you, it not only activated the experience of the neck in that lifetime, but I later on, as a result of you being the catalyst for that memory, took me to two other incarnations that followed
sure.
upon that, where it followed me through several incarnations, things connected with my neck and stories that I can tell.
Yes, and don't you notice that as we connect as spiritual beings and our energy, and we bring our bit of the expertise together, because no one has all the answers, but we spark each other and really create something even better than we individually could do. We bring out the best in each other.
Absolutely. We're all part of, we're kindred spirits, part of the great spiritual mm-hmm. family. And like attracts like, and at any given moment, there are no mistakes. When one is meant to be activated with something, it can happen in a moment. You can say something off the top of your head, and it's the thing they needed to hear all of their life, as far as, well, you could say their family needed them to hear it, and their family tried to tell them two dozen different ways, and they see you in a cafe for 20 minutes in Saint Germain, Boulevard de Saint Germain in Paris, and you say it, and you get it, and you never see them again.
I always say God can use anybody.
Everything changes.
God can use anybody. They can use. They can use. Use
absolutely.
A bum on the street. They can do somebody on the subway. You can hear a phrase or a word or a sentence that can change your life, that can open a door into your future.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's
absolutely.
One of the things you're so good at. And when once anybody opens a door, just a peek for you, just a quarter of an inch,
mm-hmm.
you are through it and a mile down the road.
Yes. When it's time, nothing's more powerful than an idea whose time has
yeah.
come. And it can be a snatch of conversation in the subway or in the
yeah.
bus. It can be the first thing that you turn on or on the radio or TV. And as you know very well, I'm not telling you anything you haven't experienced so many times. To any time you want to know something, just open certain books at random, and the answer's right there. There
oh yeah,
are no
absolutely.
Mistakes. It's It's all unfolding exactly as it should. All things work collectively together for the greater good. Even what we would call evil or ungood works ultimately for good, because the greater the pain that one has, the more
it opens your ability to fail.
To see what the cause and effect is. Because the pain eventually, Yogananda, the great Paramahansa Yogananda, who wrote Autobiography of a Yogi, said, pain eventually compels us to wonder, are not my troubles a result of my own wrong thinking? And then when we get to that point, we look to the law and the seven great universal laws. If we must be out of harmony with one or more of them if we're in any form of dis-ease. Because dis-ease of the body or the love life or the pocketbook or relations or whatever it happens to be, any kind of dis-ease only happens when we're out of harmony with one of the great seven universal laws and archangels and the whole septenary structure of every color, sound, fragrance, every... seven notes
Vanessa,
of the scale, seven colors of the spectrum, all of that.
Vanessa, would you be willing to take a question from one of our listeners?
I will happily take a question.
Okay, let's
ask the universal question that everyone will get an answer from.
Exactly. One second. Hello?
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Never
who are we speaking
better.
With?
My name is Tracy. I'm doing okay. My name is Tracy. I'm fascinated by all of this.
Great.
I guess if I were to ask a question, I mean, you know, who wouldn't want you to tell them all about them? I would love that to happen. But my question basically would be, for the evil in the world, in quotes, how does that benefit the good in a simple answer?
All things work collectively together for good, because what is evil by our definition is but an earlier stage of a person's development when they're still in the early stages of survival of the fittest. And grab first and hit first, or your days will be numbered, or someone else will get the food, or someone else will get the whatever. People are living at for whatever level they are in, or whatever grade they are in the Earth School, and we can't expect the third graders to be doing the same thing the ninth graders are doing. And so often, the third grader's getting a straight A's at his level in his grade in the Earth School, and the ninth grader may be getting just B minus or C. So there's never any way to judge. And the evil, what we call evil, is just, as we know, live backwards. And when we are doing things that, well, I think I might even go to the Christian scripture Bible, although there are parallels in it, in the Bhagavad Gita and the Quran and the I Ching and the Upanishads and all the great Bibles and books of the world. But in the Christian scripture, it says the only sin that will not be forgiven is the denial of the Holy Spirit. And I believe that metaphysically translated, that it says the only sin that will not be forgiven is the denial of the God-given free will. God gave man dominion over the beast of the field and the fowl of the air, and everything that creepeth and crawleth. But God did not give man dominion over another human. And when we take somebody's free will, it comes back around. We hear the word that what goes around comes around. Well, it works both ways. The good goes around and comes around, and the bad comes around and goes around, and there's a boomerang principle, because energy returns to its source. And we are the source. When we point outward to someone else doing something wrong, there's three fingers pointing back at who really is causing our problem. Because the only thing somebody can do is bring... I'll finish one little past thought. All someone can do is bring our energy back to us. They can be the instrument of our fate or the instrument of our reward, depending what our energy is. They don't create our fate or our reward. They just bring it back to us, because like attracts like, and we attract the negative in certain people and the positive in other people, and all they're bringing back is certain negatives and positives that are in the projection room of our psyche, that are projecting on our screen of our life. If it's on the screen of our life, then it's coming from our projection room. That's where we change the negatives so that it comes out as sunny and bright and positive, and people don't have to bring back unhappy energy to us. People on that wavelength, like attracts like.
Awesome. And Vanessa, you know, you know, Stardust, my little girl guide, has this crazy sense of humor. And she's jumping up and down saying, "No one is a total failure. They can always serve as a horrible example." And we need horrible examples.
You bet we do. Yes.
We need horrible examples to show people what not to do. Because people come in innocent, and there's nothing. There's no in where we are come where we come from. There's no resistance. There's no evil. There's no one to fight against. There's no rules because everything is good. But here we are in this world where all kinds of things happen. And we need to keep people on the right track.
And we chose this experience, did we not? I mean, we chose this life experience.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
Of course we did.
And we attract the people that have the greatest answers for us, and sometimes the teaching us how not to be precedes us being able to learn the right way to be. So we can bless people for their bad example. They may know better or can't do any better at the moment, but when we see it, we can make the change. Everyone has free will, and it's just a matter of how soon Henry changes before Jane does. In some ways, Jane changes before Henry does. In other ways,
yes.
There's everyone is an innocent child inside, and we're all sparks of the great flame. We're all drops of the cosmic sea. We're made in God's image, sparks of the great flame. The very word fire is. Or inspire, or inspiration, are all from the root word spiritus, like the Indians speak of the great spirit, from God. All inspiration is from God. All fire, inspire, things that fire us up, from God. That's the one of the elements. That's the element that corresponds to spirit. And we can get in touch with that by our attention. You are where your attention is. Where you put most of your attention is what you're attracting. That's the 51%
principle. Speaking of where we put our attention, let's talk about some of the things that you have put your attention to, like the Aquarian Federation and East Meets West Alternative Healing. Could you talk about some of the amazing organizations you and your husband, Sir Peter, have created?
Yes. We absolutely love the Children's Champions, and the Children's Champions is an AKA of what was originally called the Vocator Society, from the name of the one who inspired it, and the Children's Champions have been bringing to the world the Rainbow Rule, which we live by the Golden Rule and the Platinum Rule and do unto others and judge not lest ye be judged and all of that. Well, the Rainbow Rule is do before children as you would have them do.
Mm-hmm.
Do before children as you would have them do. There's a double entendre there. Do in front of or do before they do so they can see you do it and they know how to do it. In the monkey see, little monkey see, monkey do, copy. So do before children as you would have them do. If the world started practicing that tomorrow, 90% of our problems would go away.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the inner child, not just the outer child, but the inner child and every single person who remains that child. And to return to Eden, to the original innocence, before we learned to make judgments and prejudice and all that. The child didn't have those things conscious when they came in. They had to learn it somewhere down here. Who are they copying?
They certainly
were they
did.
Trying to please? And, are they trying to please a good dad or a bad dad by world standards? Or a good mom or a bad mom by world standards?
And do they get attention when they do something good, or do they only get attention when they do something bad?
Yes. Absolutely.
This is a serious question here now.
Talk about mixed message. Where we give, do we reward a child for doing something wrong? No. And if an earthly parent wouldn't do it, certainly our heavenly parent, Father, Mother, God, would not either. It makes me think of one of my most popular seminars, which is the food causes fat fallacy, or the missing oxygen factor. With all the multi-billion-dollar, trillion-dollar dieting industry, how can heaven reward us for being mean to our inner child?
Absolutely.
How can diets work ever when they're doing something that is D-I-E and then cross your arms together and putting yourself
on
the
cross? And then you have to lose something. I mean, who wants to lose? I had one of my greatest triumphs in working with someone who was overweight was, you're not losing weight, you're getting gorgeous.
Absolutely. The subconscious is programmed to restore anything in the category of lost. You think it doesn't, human beings seem think that they can say the word lose and it doesn't have any effect, but it does, because there's a great neural linguistic programming from the subconscious mind. If they say they've lost something, then there's a panic mode that goes on that starts to try to restore it any way it could, because it's lost, you know, and that's programmed. And the success that people have, we might as well tell them that the food causes fat fallacy is the missing oxygen factor. It doesn't have to do with the amount of food we're sticking in our mouth. It has to do with the amount of oxygen we're getting or not getting for the metabolic furnace to burn the calories. Two perfect twins eating the exact same diet with the exact same set of circumstances can be very slim and very heavy, depending on which one is getting enough oxygen for their metabolic furnace to burn the calories, and which one is holding their breath and is not getting enough oxygen.
What the subconscious is attempting to do, because the subconscious, as you will know, has absolutely no sense of humor, and it doesn't understand when you say losing something. They start looking for it.
Yeah,
and on a
literal,
spiritual
like a little,
level, this is a truth.
The subconscious is like a little innocent child that believes whatever we tell it, even if we're lying to ourselves or lying to them or saying what somebody else said that isn't true. The subconscious acts on it like the innocent child believing us and makes true that, yes, that is bad food and bad for you and it's going to put weight on you and all of that. Who said the food was bad? We ourselves had to do the condemning for the food to be bad, because bad food only has two choices. That it can either make us sick or make us fat. And if we've labeled the banana cream pie or whatever our favorite pasta or whatever as bad food, bad for us, then it faithfully follows through the subconscious and whole greater working of cause and effect that it will cause problems for us. We're the one. Who said it was bad? Who told you were naked? that is from the Genesis. Remember what God said to Adam
Absolutely.
When he hid in the garden? And God said, why are you hiding? He says, because I'm naked. And he said, who told you you were naked? Where'd you get such a fool idea?
I'm convinced that was the original sin, was being ashamed of
being
our
ashamed.
Body.
Yeah.
Yes, that was the original sin. No
yeah.
question.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
that's a spiritual truth.
The one of the differences between the person who's always slim and the one that has the weight problems off and on all the time is the one who's slim never labels any food bad. In fact, they don't even think any in terms of food being good or bad. If you ask a slim person
they don't think
why they eat, they say because I'm hungry.
Eating it.
If you ask a heavy person why they eat, they'll give you a dozen different answers. But a slim person will say, they'll look at you in wonder and go, because I'm hungry, of course.
It's so
obvious to them.
Yeah.
Oh, I have sometimes said, much to the surprise and consternation of certain people, that it just came out of my mouth when I said, if you are denying God in the form of the primal breath, don't be surprised if you find that you're carrying an extra burden of weight on your body. Because if you don't let the primal breath in, it can't burn up the calories. God can't heal you if you don't let him in.
Yeah.
And the person looks at me and says, you mean you're telling me I'm overweight because I'm denying God? Well, in the form of the original primal breath. If it's inside you, if you have enough breath, all the organs are working perfectly. And if you don't have enough breath, one of the first ones to go is the metabolism. Because
Absolutely.
You can survive if you gain or lose a few pounds, but your immune system and other systems of your body really, really need that fire energy of spirit. And so the body shuts down systems in direct proportion to the amount that you don't have the breath of God. And that's why the Easterns do the seven breaths of life, and the Indians know how to do it, and the East Indians and the secret saints and sages and ancient alchemists and druids and masters of Stonehenge, the great Tibetan lamas and Eastern sages all know these kinds of secrets. The Aztec and Inca priests, the Indian medicine men and witch doctors and the Aboriginal masters know these kinds of secrets. And the Aquarian Age is about bringing all of that forward into the now. Bring the best of the past into the now. One is not truly Aquarian unless they're bringing the best of the past and looking to the future view to see the best that their imagination and their spirit can inspire them with. What would you ideally have, and what's the best of the past that you, if you're the living example of the best that you know, and you're representing well the great masters who've gone before us, then in the now you've got a marriage of past and future, sort of like of East and West, past and future, yin and yang, that incredible balance that is what the Aquarian Age is about. The Aquarian Age is the great awakening that we are spirits, not these bodies. These little body vehicles go into the junkyard like the last three cars we had one day, and we are no more dead then than we are now, because we are not the body vehicle.
Yes, it's like a rental car.
Yes.
we come into this planet, and we choose an instrument to use while we're here to do our job. Just like we choose a car for a trip that we're taking. It's very simple, but most people do not understand that this body is actually our temple. And it is the instrument that we chose to do the job that we came here to do. So that's why it's so important for people like you and me to help people understand they need to take, they have a sacred duty to take care of their body.
Yes, yes, yes. And the more they do, the more joy can they contain. And the more that they do, the more that they will have the capacity to understand and attract and magnetize the right people and circumstances and situations and sustenance of any kind and abundance or anything that they need. As you take care of your center and spirit inside this body temple, then you start to attract people at a higher frequency and a different kind of echelon of experience. And some people wonder why people are being so much nicer to me now after I had that that wonderful revelation that that changed so much of my perception and understanding. Like attracts like. When you change you, you change everything on the screen of your life and all the people that you attract. And it's easy at this moment in time to start to attract kindred spirits and the great spiritual family. There's a great reunion that's taking place now. I think of the words of the song that says, "Now over the skyline I see our traveling brothers and sisters from all time are gathering here. We are back to build the ship of the future, but in the ancient pattern."
Now that leads right into your book.
Yes.
And I've got to say this. What about that book you wrote about the soul twins?
Absolutely. I wrote the book the Astral Twin Book, and the Astral
there
Twin book enables me to help people to understand what astral twin means and coined the word, and let me define it now. A person who is an astral twin to you is someone who is learning the same lessons in the earth school as you are, even if they live in Timbuktu and you live in Kathmandu and you never meet each other. If they are an astral twin, it means that they are in astrological terms, many people know that there's someone that is born a day or two on their own birthday or the day before or the day after, anywhere within 5 days, a 10-degree radius, 5 degrees either side. Each degree is a day. And anyone born within 5 days of you, and the closer to exactly your birthday, is an astral twin, and they're learning categorically the same lesson as you are in the earth school. And the Astral Twin book enables me to have someone tell not the year but only the day and month of their birth, and I can tell them people out of history and current people in the world on the world arena, currently incarnate and previous incarnate celebrities that are astral twins to them. And what this means is they have an opportunity, if the person's incarnate, to meet them, and often do after they find out the coincidence abound. And if the person's not incarnate, that person can be a spiritual guide, someone that they've known in a previous incarnation who was in the guide capacity, because even as the American Indians, when they meet at their council fires, are there to speak to the ancestors, not to talk to the medicine men and chieftain and witch doctors and blood brothers that are there around the council fires, but they want to talk with the ancestors and the ancients who have gone before, because the Indians believe in what I call the Great Mandela. Peter, Paul, and Mary, Bob Dylan, and several people have sung the song that tells about take your place on the Great Mandela as it moves through your brief moment in time. And the Great Mandela, a wheel of life, we can be incarnate or in spirit. Those who are in the happy hunting ground in spirit are looking back in on their loved ones. You can only be two places. You're either here, incarnate, there, disincarnate, but you may be on your way back as a baby, and we greet you and acclimate you to this world, or you may be going back over to the other side, and the welcoming committee welcomes you and greets you and acclimates you to the world, the wonderful world on that side. So when we pass, we get to meet the various loved ones and members of the welcoming committee. And so when people are born, the welcoming committee welcomes them. And so we're all one great family, and particularly the American Indians are aware of that. No one goes anywhere. Everybody is somewhere. They're on one side, the top side of the wheel where the rainbow is, or the bottom side of the wheel where the pendulum swings within the gravity field of Earth. And of the four elements, fire and air are part of that great rainbow in the top half of the circle, and water and earth, which fall down within the gravity field, are part of this gravity that includes the body that's 80% water, and all the things that have to do with this earthly realm of lessons where there is a duality. But we can be assured that if someone loves us and they've passed to the other side, they don't forget about us, just like we wouldn't. They're part of our earlier relay team. If I go to
Absolutely.
The other side, am I going to forget everybody that I've been on the team with? No, of course not. I'm looking back in as other people carry the torch across the finish line. We're all winning because we're all part of the same team. Everybody on the relay team is winning, no matter who's carrying the torch.
And speaking of that team, hold on.
Sure.
We have to give people, a way to reach out to you. We cannot end this up without doing that. Could you give us a website, an email address, something?
It's just a matter of putting Vanessa Talmalord in the search engine. And a picture of me will come up with certain flyers and certain things that are on it. And there is a number there that can be called. And
good. Okay, great.
So that is the way. Putting my name, Vanessa Talmalord, and Talmalord is T-A-L-M-A, hyphen, capital L-O-R-D. Vanessa, V-A-N-E-S-S-A.
So all they have
T-A-L-
to do is Google you?
T-A-L-M-A. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, forgive me for interrupting, but I felt that I owe it to our listeners to be sure and get this clear that they need a way to reach out to you. And now, I know you were a guest on many, many, many national TVs and radio shows. What was that like?
Oh, wow. My mind goes to many different little moments that were part of each of the shows, whether it was Geraldo or Joe Franklin or the Good Morning New York was back at the time that Regis was part of that show. And the afternoon that I was on, there was a guest host. I remember Joe Franklin dubbing me the First Lady of Reincarnation, and that kind of
stuck. Huh?
And on the Good Morning New York show, we spoke of the food causes fat fallacy and how in part the American Indians have learned to stay still and to stay slim. In part because there are certain things that they do that have to do with whelping and yelping and certain stomping dances and things where they're breathing and they're oxygenating themselves and they're letting out the frustration and trauma that causes us to hold our breath. It's because of trauma and shock that we hold our breath, and when we hold our breath, the pounds come on. And when we go back to breathing properly, and that's why the seven breaths of life and all of that, the great yogic cleansing breaths, and I just name them right down the line, change everything, and you go slim again when you're no longer in that uptight, tight stomach, flexed tight because you've been punched in the stomach and you're afraid it's going to come again. Once stung, twice shy. We tend to hold our breath when we want to stay in control. And the very nature of holding our breath keeps the God force oxygen from coming in, the breath of life that will heal all the internal and external parts of our disease. It's that we don't have enough spirit, and you can't have fire without oxygen. So the spirit can't stay in the body without oxygen, just like a foot that goes to sleep. The reason why it prickles is because the astral has detached itself and it prickles when it's re-entering. I can look around the room and see somebody's foot is asleep because I see the astral foot is in place and the regular foot's in place and the astral foot is detached. And then when the oxygen comes back through the blood, then the prickling is when the spirit is integrating. It's integrating back in. And the astral body is reconnecting. That's a matter of being beside ourselves. When we hold our breath because we get upset, we're livid with rage, or we're petrified with fear, we hold our breath. And when we do, we're literally beside ourselves, outside ourselves, with upset. And consider the people that get so upset they jump out of their body, and when they come back, the vase is broken across the room, or somebody's holding their face or stomach or something, and they didn't even do it. They were outside themselves and inviting those.
Yeah. Well, as a medical astrologist, I find that is something that comes into effect there.
Medical astrology, when done the way I've been trained in a scene training, enables me to tell a person their entire medical history and even where their scars are. If they're 21 years of age, the chart. This is not astrology, actually. It's advanced metaphysics, because an astrologer is not trained in being able to tell you your medical and psychological history and your previous incarnations, where your scars are, and even the death is shown in a chart, right down to 4 minutes. Within 4 minutes, here's another thing about reincarnation: we disincarnate at a particular degree on the Great Mandela or 360 degree wheel of life, and we reincarnate again back at the same degrees. This lifetime, I've got the documentation. I had to go to Vienna to document my last incarnation and my moment of death. And that's where, the first day in Vienna, I met my soulmate husband, love at first sight, instant recognition, and we're coming up to 36 years married, still on honeymoon. And I'd gone to research my last incarnation. And sure enough, I passed at the fourth degree of Scorpio, 535 a.m., September 20th, 1910, Vienna, Austria, and I reincarnated in the fourth degree of Scorpio, Dover, New Jersey, 308 a.m., January 1st, 1945, and in my last incarnation, I was also born January 1st, but it was 1858, and I was male in that incarnation. And the incarnation behind that, male and also Capricorn, and also Joseph.
Yeah,
Joseph,
you're just
Talma,
giving me giving me chills, Vanessa.
Yes, and all of my beloved people, you among the most beloved of the most impressive women I have ever met. you have been in these incarnations, so you're going to get chills and things because they you fit into these incarnations and have wonderful stories and stuff that you know at higher levels, and you know it, mm-hmm. and you'll unfold one by one as you have been all of this lifetime. The ancient memories that are in our memory bank. Our soul carries over things from previous lifetimes, and that's the reason why we do have these talents and attractions
yes.
and aversions and likes and dislikes and opinions and all of that. It's carryover.
And,
so
and Stardust
much of it.
Is just, she is pushing me to really push you to talk about helping people to change their destiny. Because we have more than one road that we can take, and if we choose to go to take the right fork or the left fork or go straight ahead, our ultimate destiny changes. So she wants you to talk a little bit about that we can literally change our future by learning and we can help other people as spiritual advisors to change their future.
Absolutely. One of the best ways that I know to recognize that you've been going west for 30 years looking for a sunrise and new dawn, it may take you 30 years of going west and thinking you're going east, but the moment that it dawns on you and the light bulb goes on, how long does it take to pivot that 180? That pivot takes a moment, and you're no longer walking into the shadows. You're walking back into the light. If we're seeing shadows, if we're seeing the great Luciferic shadows of life, the things that would drag us down, the great dragon, and Scripture talks about Lucifer, you old dragon. Lucifer's domain is in the head. Thinking makes it.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
When our attention, we stand in the sunlight, but is our back to the sun? We will not notice shadows unless our back's to the sun. And one of the highest teachings I've learned is pursue what you do want rather than avoid what you don't want. And that's huge. It sounds so obvious, but pursue is a mastery modality. Avoid is a victim modality. Pursue what you do want, and you're in the positive, light, sunny, bright board of your higher self. Avoid what you don't want. You're coming from victimhood and fear. Darkness feareth the light, but let us remember that there isn't enough darkness in the entire cosmos to put out the smallest candle, and everybody's holding the light wherever they are and to whatever degree. The Scripture says, don't hide your light under a bushel, and we are wonderful little lights of God, light workers who bring light wherever we are, and whether we're bringing a lesser or greater light depends on the amount of attention we have on what's right with the universe and feeding the 51% principle, the law of attention, putting your attention on what's sunny and bright and beautiful and of good report, rather than casting eyes down to the darkness and heaviness and gloom and gutters of life. Is it not better to cultivate the roses than try to fix the gutters?
Yes.
If you cultivate the roses, people will happily climb up to get to the roses, and we don't have to try to drag them out of the mud. We have to give them an alternative choice in their own soul.
Yes. Now, speaking of choices and speaking of directions, would you tell us a little bit about your latest ventures and where you're headed and your vision for the future here in your work and what you plan to do in, because I know you're living quite a long time yet.
yes. Well, we are having such a wonderful time preparing our two of our books. I have written quite a number of books that are not published yet, and we've been synthesizing to put many things together in a very synthesized way. And so there are two main books that we're working on. Soul Aspects of the Stars is S-O-U-L, Aspects of the Stars, meaning celebrity people. It's the book is called Soul Aspects of the Stars or Past Lives, if you will. And I have, for 40 years now, been plus 40, have been assessing which souls are coming forward into current celebrity people who are affecting the world again in this lifetime, who affected the world in the past. And they've just come forward, and there are metaphysical and esoteric and Essene ways of knowing and recognizing these things. There are actual formulas, but it's not known to the masses, nor could it be that everybody finds out exactly what they're supposed to when they do. That book is, it's really something. We've been collecting all the pictures where you can put two pictures together, and it's so obviously same person, the door, the eyes of the doorway of the soul. And I, through many occasions, hold up a picture to a person's head and let them look in the mirror and at the picture and at themselves, and let someone else look at them and look at the picture. And it's so much fun to see the dawning, the awakening in the eyes that there is, that's the same soul aspect. They're coming in from the same great oversoul. Many people think that they are a person out of the past, when actually they're just part of the oversoul, and that's their great guiding higher self oversoul. That is, so it's not that they are Cleopatra, it's that they're under the auspices of the great Cleopatra archetype oversoul thing.
You know, and I have been told that there is the whole soul, the whole self, and you can think of it as an ocean, and each incarnation is like a wave that comes on shore.
And
that wave has interacts with the shore. The wave, you can see it's stirring up the sand, picking up things and taking it back to the ocean. And our experiences here we take it back into that whole soul. So there, what's to prevent two or three different waves coming up onto shore in different places from
you
the same ocean?
Absolutely. Even as the oversoul has the ability, well, let's say it another way. At any given moment in time, there can only be 9 incarnate aspects of an oversoul. And it's sort of like saying Marilyn Monroe had to go over for Madonna to come down. Parts of the same oversoul that are Marie Antoinette as well. Jacqueline Onassis was Madeline Jacqueline Bizarra. Marilyn Monroe was Marie Antoinette. In the previous incarnation, one was the wife and the other was the mistress. And then the more current incarnation, the other was the wife and the other was the mistress. And the carryover things are so amazing. There are, when you start seeing the greater picture, it all makes sense, because there's nothing unfair in the universe. Everything's unfolding as it should in the greater picture, and there are no victims, and there are no, nothing is unfair in the greater picture. I stopped counting at 3,000 clients, and I had never seen one mistake, and have not to this day seen one mistake that I can't explain karmically in the greater sense of why did I have to lose that baby? Why did I have to?
In 60 seconds, can you give something to the world? Can you just say something to the audience?
we are at the moment in time now where everything starts has started to change because there's a great planetary alignment and greater things going on at a celestial level, and even our wonderful space brothers and sisters look in on the moment we are in our planetary evolution. We're getting ready to go into the next stage of great awakening, the great awakening of the Aquarian age, where people start to recognize that we are spirits, not these bodies. They start to find their voice. They start to stop being phony and stop tolerating others being phony. And in the Aquarian age, the nothing is too sacred or too holy for someone to not look at. So we're looking at government and religion and all the different things that used to be too holy to look at. We are definitely taking the veil off and looking under the old fallen beach log to see how many, you know, whether there's a rabbit under there or a whole bunch of maggots or whatever happens to be there. And the Aquarians are not afraid of the truth. They are seeking to, and the message of Aquarius is that we are supposed to either take something and replace it if it's not good enough, upgrade it or enhance it or fix it if it's fairly good but not quite right, then we enhance it and then we improve it and we change it whichever ways are necessary. But if it's not good enough, we throw it out.
We're out of time. Next,
enforce it.
Show is over. Let me call you. Bye.
Okay, my darling. Love to everyone. Love. Bye. God bless.